Welcome to the Sisters in Service podcast. My name is Kat Corchado. I'm a fellow Air Force veteran who, after 20 years of active duty, struggled with transition after leaving service. The Sisters in Service podcast is a platform to include all women veterans, organizations, military spouses, and Blue Star, Gold Star families in talking about the trials and triumphs we face while in service and after service. In our episode today, we're going to be talking about service dogs, how you can get one free if you qualify, and also how these dogs are also for the hearing impaired. So imagine a world where you get to go to work every day and you get to play with dogs. Listen in. Welcome to episode 48 of the Sisters in Service podcast. I am your host, Kat Corchado. And my guest today is Katie Hanna from the Needs World Class Service Dogs. So when I first heard about her, I was like, okay, dogs and service. And I was like, I need to know who she is. Because any place where you're allowed to have dogs, I'm in. Okay. Katie, welcome to Sisters in Service. How are you?
Thank you. I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Katie, you retired from the Army Reserves, correct?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your service, what you did in the reserves.
Well, I like to call it a long and winding road because I have a combination of active and reserve service. Joined right in high school, my senior year. I enlisted and went off to basic training right after graduation. When most of my friends were enjoying summer, I was off to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, to beat the heat. And then went off to college, served in the reserves for a few years, and decided to take an ROTC scholarship. So I got my commission through the University of Iowa, ROTC. Went active duty for about 11 years. I had met my husband in ROTC in college. And so we served together on active duty. And then we started to have our kids. We have four kids, and things got a little bit challenging with both of us being active. So I had a break in service. Well, went in the reserves for about a year, had a break in service for almost 8 or 9 years, and decided that I wanted to come back and finish my service. So I came back in the U.S. Army Reserve in 2013 and just retired last April after 23-ish years, but over a span of much longer, and really enjoyed it. I've, you know, traveled the world, seen the world. I'm a Medical Service Corps officer with operations experience, a couple of peacekeeping deployments to Haiti and Kosovo. And my last assignment was really enjoyable. I was at the Office of the Surgeon General in Falls Church, Virginia, where I got to see the big army, which was really incredible, with a lot of flexibility. I was an IMA, individual manning augmentee. So I kind of went periodically, would go for about a week and, you know, do my service for a couple of months period, basically. Just really enjoyed it. So it's been wonderful. It's been neat to contribute and complete my service. It was one of those things I always wondered about when I came off active duty, if I would ever come back and finish out. And I'm really glad that I was able to. So I am now officially
both sides of it then.
Yeah, absolutely. And as an Army spouse, you know, because my husband retired after 23 years active duty.
Right.
So
right.
I've seen that aspect of it too, but definitely a unique perspective and just really enjoyed it.
Let me ask you this real quick. I was talking to someone who was a guard. She was in the guard. Mm-hmm. So did you ever hear that you weren't really in the real military because you were in the guard?
All the time. And, you know, I have a unique perspective because I was active duty for 11 years, that brings a certain level of credibility to my background and to my capabilities. But definitely in the reserve and the guard, you know, I think people often feel a little bit of, you know, maybe you're secondhand or, you know, not quite as legitimate as the active force, but they bring an incredible amount of capability to the total Army force, as we like to call it. You know, for the medical corps, for the Army Medical Command, a lot of our capability is in the reserves. So it's a unique perspective. And, you know, we can be called up to deploy and mobilize sometimes stateside, you know, at a moment's notice as well. So it's really challenging. And, you know, people have a day job, so to speak, or a life other than the military. So juggling that and balancing that can be really tough, especially with young children. And I think for women, it's a unique perspective too, because that was my challenge coming back. I still had younger children. My husband was still serving active duty. We were stationed over in Germany when I came back in. So I always had to juggle, okay, where are the kids at? Do I have coverage for them? Can I, you know, my unit always wanted me to come on orders to work full time, so to speak. My commander at the time was a full-time government civilian. She was a pharmacist. So she worked at the Landstuhl Pharmacy. So she always wanted me to cover her for meetings and presentations. And oftentimes, you know, I could do it, but sometimes I'd have to say no because I really didn't have a way to balance my life as a parent with my service.
You don't have that flexibility. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there isn't any flexibility at all.
Right.
But one of the reasons that I really wanted to do this podcast was to have a platform for women veterans, because a lot of the women veterans I talked to felt invisible. And one of the things that I couldn't understand was like, I don't feel invisible, but what I came to understand is that other organizations don't see them as veterans. Mm-hmm. And the more I'm aware of it, the more I'm noticing it, whether it's on TV, whether it's in ads or whatever. Have you come across that? Is that something you've seen a lot? And was that important to you being with the organization you're with now?
Definitely. I would say I've come across it maybe more as, you know, stories and anecdotes from friends. I have come across it myself. You know, women in a uniform look a certain way. You have the uniform, your hair is typically up, although now we can wear battle braids and things like that, but you know, you look more soldier-like. For men, you know, when they retire or they come out of service, oftentimes they tend to look similar to what they did. You know, maybe they keep their hair cut short. They tend to wear, you know, the hats that have, you know, certain logos and veteran identification on them, or you know, just the t-shirts, the gear, those kind of things. For women, you know, people look at you and go, you couldn't possibly be a veteran or a soldier because you just don't look like one. Well, what does that look like when you're in civilian clothes? So it's a challenge, you know, everything from people kind of questioning you if you have veteran plates or you park in a veteran spot or get a veteran discount. You know, typically with the veteran discount, it's not as big a deal because I present my card, my face is on it. I kind of look the same, but it's a challenge. And I think, you know, women are more so explaining themselves. There's just an expectation that you're not the veteran. For me, you know, like when I'm with my husband, we always love to talk to, you know, other veterans or older veterans when we meet them. And they'll often thank my husband for his service because he's typically wearing some kind of a hat identifying, you know, the 101st or some unit we were with. But my husband's really good about saying, oh no, she's a veteran too. She served just as long as I did. You know, but they still kind of look at you like, really? You know, it's just a change in mindset, I think. And we have to remember that, you know, our Vietnam era veterans, certainly the World War II ones that are left, Korean War, there weren't a lot of women service members. There weren't a lot of women involved. There were women involved, certainly, but not to the level that we have now in the, you know, post 9/11 era. So it's just it's a change in mindset that people aren't used to seeing that and expecting that. But I love to break down those barriers and to get people, you know, to realize women can be veterans too. I often wear veteran pins on my jackets or my shirt or my collar. And again, that doesn't necessarily tell people you're the veteran, but I like to represent, you know, U.S. Army or sometimes pins from units that I've been in. I will wear hats sometimes if I'm a little more casually dressed, but I think it's important for us to, you know, express that women serve too in lots of capacities. And, you know, we have our fair share of challenges for sure with juggling home life and service.
I think it's funny that you said that you're breaking down barriers. And I like to think of it, when I think of it, I think of it as I'm busting down doors.
Yep. Sometimes you have to.
So when you went to work for NEEDS, was the fact that they were veteran friendly, and I hate that. I hate that phrase. Veteran friendly just is so generic. Mm-hmm. But was it the fact that this organization in some way helped veterans, and you knew they helped veterans by their service. And not only that, but tell us about what your organization actually does.
Well, that was the big draw for me. Well, just before I retired, I worked for the Census Bureau for almost 2 years doing the 2020 census. And that is a government entity that's incredibly veteran focused because veterans get priority in the position. So that was great. Not necessarily a veteran focused entity, but lots of veterans on board. That ended. I had been kind of looking for the next thing, and I knew my service was coming to an end. And I really wanted to do something with veterans, help veterans, be involved with veterans, just have that. You miss that sense of community when you no longer have your service. And we certainly feel it as reservists too, because our connection is so intermittent, you know, and I worked for an active component unit. So it was even more challenging because they were there all the time. When I came back, I always felt like I was kind of playing catch up. But when my service ended, I'd been looking for the next thing. And, you know, one of the contacts I had from the Census Bureau, who is part of the Central Mass Veterans Coalition and also works for Mass Hire, had sent me an email and said, hey, there's this position, you know, with the service dog organization. I thought, well, that's interesting. I never even thought about working with service dogs, you know, or in that world, in that realm. And I said, I gotta see more about this. So I contacted the person who is now my supervisor, and we talked, and I just immediately felt this connection. I wouldn't say it was required to be a veteran, but they wanted a veteran in this position. The person before me had been a veteran. It's a big part of the of understanding the culture, the people that we're helping that are veterans. Certainly we help civilians too, but my position was certainly more veteran focused. You know, it just lends some credence to the position when you can say, yep, been there, done that. I know what you're talking about. You know, we all have a shared common understanding, even though all services are represented. I think we've served people from every branch of service. And it really drew me to be able to interact with veterans. I missed one-on-one interaction with people, you know, clients, so to speak. And it's just such an amazing industry. So a little bit about Needs World-Class Service Dogs. We are one of the founding members of Assistance Dog International, which is the accrediting body, which gives people the ability to have a service dog and public access through the ADA. It's very important in the service dog world because, you know, I think people realize out there, there is a little bit of, you know, maybe training your own dog or kind of calling your dog a service dog or an emotional support animal. And I won't really get into that, but just the fact that we train dogs to the level that they are, you know, unflappable. They're going to go out there and take care of the person and their needs, whether they're a civilian or a veteran. For veterans, we have three programs. We have a hearing dog program, which amazingly is really, it's kind of on the uptick. We've had a lot of hearing applications, people, you know, of all ages, believe it or not, people who had some hearing loss due to service connection. Maybe it started and has progressively gotten worse. Some people, you know, maybe happened later in life.
And you never think hearing. You always think of someone who might be legally blind or they have maybe PTSD or something else, but you never think of hearing. So I think that's really interesting. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's such a different world. And you realize the loss of that sense makes such an impact on your life. And sometimes people realize it because they had a personal dog that actually had some kind of just an innate ability of, you know, alerting them to certain things. And maybe that dog passes away and they realize, oh, I really miss that ability of the dog to tell me the doorbell is ringing or someone's calling my name. Maybe a buzzer is going off that I wasn't aware of. And most of the clients, they have hearing aids. They can hear to some extent, but there is a gap. And the dog really fills that gap. And the service dogs that serve our hearing clients are just truly amazing. They're all obedient needs dogs. We train Labrador Retrievers because their temperament, their obedience, their ability to learn and execute the tasks and the commands
they're
given.
And they're just lovely dogs.
And they're great dogs. Yeah. I mean, they're incredible. They're big balls of love, but yeah. So, you know, our hearing dogs really serve an incredible purpose. And then we do have service dogs for people with a physical disability of some kind. Maybe it's mobility, maybe it's reaching objects. That's where that retriever comes in handy, because they can go pick up something off the counter. They could get medication. They can open the fridge with a tug rope and get a bottle of water out for the person and close the fridge. Most importantly, they can pick up keys. You know, a person might drop their keys in the grocery store and the dog can pick those keys up. If they fall and they're injured, they can actually go find the person's cell phone. And so they can make a phone call and call for help. And these dogs only bark when they're given that command to bark. So it's really important, because they are obedient out in public. They're not going to be that barking dog. They're not going to be, you know, they won't get up until they're told to get up. They can be put into a down stay under a table at a restaurant. And it just gives the person the ability to kind of get their life back in a way if there's been some kind of an impairment in a way.
If the person is mobile enough that they're able to go into different stores, different venues, are these dogs allowed in these venues, or is it up to the proprietor, or have you seen any issues with that?
We do get calls sometimes. We train the people when they come out for training on what their rights are as a service dog owner and what the rights are of the business. But under the American Disabilities Act, they have the ability to go and have public access just about anywhere with an accredited and well-trained service dog. They each get a little card. They've got, you know, their accreditation number on it. The dogs wear our needs vest, and they're, you know, they also represent themselves well just by their behavior, because they all, you know, are obedient. They stay right with their handler. But yeah, if they get to a restaurant, you know, we've had just the other day, we had a client who came in for a follow-up, and he said, you know, I usually have no problem at all. But in 1 week, he had gone to two different restaurants and they kind of said, oh, you're going to have to sit outside with your dog, with your pet, I think they called it. And he said, well, my dog's a service animal. And by the American Disabilities Act, I'm allowed to have the dog as long as the dog, you know, sits where it's supposed to sit and doesn't bark or get in the way. No disruption. Absolutely. And the person kind of went, oh. And sometimes they have to do a bit of education. You know, oftentimes someone at the restaurant is aware, but you might get one employee that is not aware of what their rights are as a service dog owner. Usually it's not a problem. When they fly, the airline is entitled to ask them if their dog can perform, you know, service dog tasks. They can't ask about their disability. You know, they usually file the paperwork that's necessary prior to the flight. And then when they get there, they can check in. And there should be no issue with them bringing the dog. So just about anywhere you can go for public access, our dogs are all trained and exposed to the train, the tea, to be outside in cars around, you know, some fair amount of noise. None of that
bothers
them. They
don't scare easily. They're used right. to those types of sounds. So is it safe to assume that NEEDS is a national organization, A? And B, if I need a service dog and I'm in North Carolina, which I am actually, and I heard about your organization and I call you, are you able to refer me to another organization that's closer to where I live?
Absolutely. So first off, yes, we're national. We serve clients nationally for our programs. The only caveat is that when we do accept a client, we've interviewed them, we determined that we can meet their needs, we're the right organization for them. They do have to come out to our campus for training for about a week and a half. If we decide that we can't meet their needs, or if they just would prefer to work with an organization closer to them, we can absolutely refer them to another good accredited organization that's accredited under Assistance Dog International. They have a great website that people can, you know, select their state. They can select the types of dogs they're looking for. Do they need a hearing dog? Do they have a child that has, you know, a need for a dog for autism, things like that. But we always refer people to a good accredited organization. We've served clients all over the country. We have needs dogs everywhere. We obviously do serve a lot of people out here in the New England area, but it's wonderful. And one of the nice things for our veterans is that there are certainly other organizations that do this as well. There's no cost to our veterans to get a needs dog, whereas our civilian clients do have a fundraising initiative they have to meet. And we even fly our veteran clients out to training if they're in Florida, let's say, and they don't want to drive. It's just too far and wouldn't make sense. We'll fly them out. Either we use Angel Flights often, or we'll cover the cost of their flight, get them out here to campus. We have a lovely client house that they stay in for free. All of our clients have that. Yeah.
I love that. Wonderful. I love the fact that, you know, there's no cost to our veterans. What is the prerequisite for me to call you and say, I need a dog? Is it a referral from the VA? Is it a doctor who has said, we think you that you need, you know, a dog to help you out? What is that prerequisite, or is there one?
So for our hearing dogs and our service dogs for veterans with a physical disability, there's no requirement to be service connected. They just have to have an honorable discharge, a DD-214, to show their service. There's no referral required. Oftentimes, those veterans, especially the hearing veterans, are service connected through the VA. They often have their hearing aids through the VA, but there's no requirement for that. The benefit is, if they are service connected for what we're serving them for, the VA will cover their pet insurance. So that's a really nice feature, because that can help with the costs of ongoing vet care, especially if there's something a little bit, you know, down the road, something develops that they need some kind of care or procedure for. That really helps. But
that's a big deal. Especially when you have a pet, that's a big deal, pet insurance.
Definitely. And we recommend that to our civilian clients as well. But to have the VA cover that is phenomenal. But yeah, there's really no prerequisite. What currently, with, you know, the impact of COVID-19 has hit hard on the whole industry. So like many other organizations, we have closed our applications, with the exception of veteran clients and people who had a previous service dog that may have gotten, you know, into older age and passed. We will see them again for a second service dog if they need that. So we have a pre-screening questionnaire on our website people can fill out, and then it takes them into the ability to fill out an application if they say they're a veteran. They can always call us. You know, we love for them to call us and talk through what their needs are. Are we the right organization for them? And then if we determine that they're not, you know, our dogs don't handle people that have, like, you know, dizziness, falling down, some instability. Our dogs aren't right for them. But there are organizations out there that help in that regard. So we would refer them out to a different organization. But really no prerequisite, just that they're a veteran.
What is the time lapse from when I either call you or I go online and fill out an application? How long is it before I'm actually able to get the dog?
It's a great question and a very fuzzy answer. you know, we do have a bit of a backlog of accepted clients. However, we are prioritizing our veterans. We have a federal grant to serve veterans annually. We do give them a priority and try to get them through the process so that, you know, when dogs become available, we can match a veteran if possible, if we have the right dog for the veteran. We don't really keep a numbered order list, you know, like you would expect. Okay, my number slowly creeping up to number one. We find the right dog for the right person. And so that's kind of how our matching goes. It's a very in-depth process, an interview, a follow-up interview. If we're not able to see them in person, we have them send us videos interacting with dogs. We can kind of see their style, you know, what type of interaction do they have with dogs. A lot of people have had animals and dogs in their life, but some haven't, and just decide that a service dog is really going to benefit them. So we say, you know, it could be anywhere from a few months to possibly a year or two. Our dogs train for 2 years. So it's a long lead time from puppyhood to actually being ready. You know, at two, they're young adults, but they're still young, and we expect them to work for about 8 to 10 years of their working life. We do purpose breeding here on campus. We used to have, you know, a pretty decent amount of dogs coming from outside sources, other service organizations, Guiding Eyes for the Blind. You know, if a dog wasn't right, the right temperament or the right fit for to be a guide dog, they would often give them to us. Well, during COVID, that, you know, we stopped getting dogs. And so thankfully we were doing purpose breeding here at our NEEDS campus. And we actually have a beautiful new breeding center that will open down the road in January, hopefully. So that helps a lot, but you know, it's a 2-year lead time. So they go into training at about 2 months, and we use the prison system for training our dogs, which is pretty unique. We have about 6 different prisons here in New England that we use, and that gives the dogs the opportunity for, you know, almost 24/7 training, you know, with someone who can really give them a lot of one-on-one attention. And then on the weekends, we have puppy or dog raisers that will take them out and go take them to their home, take them out in the public, get them socialization, which is great because we want our dogs to be exposed to lots of different environments. We have puppy raisers.
Any job that you can go to work and just see dogs walking around the office. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want to be in an environment like that? I mean, that's, if you love dogs, that's the perfect environment. I always tell people that, you know, I kind of missed my calling because I absolutely love dogs. And I will show my husband, I'll say, look at this dog. Isn't it cute? And he goes, you think all dogs are cute? And I'm like, okay, what's your point? So.
Yep.
Well, I love what you guys are doing. And it baffles me that I didn't know about your organization. And I think, okay, if I don't know about your organization, who else doesn't know about your organization? Now, in New England, people might know who you are, but there might be people who need your help, but they don't live in the New England area. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I always want to put a spotlight on those organizations that are doing some amazing things for not just female veterans, but veterans in general. And this is one of those organizations that when I first talked to you, I thought, this is amazing. Get on my podcast now. We need to talk about this.
Let's talk about dogs.
Let's talk about dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty neat. And, you know, we do want to increase our support to women veterans too. And I mean, I've only been here for a couple of months, and just since I've been here, we've already interviewed and we're getting ready to match one of our female veterans who needs a hearing dog. And then we've had a couple of other interviews with female veterans who also need hearing dogs, believe it or not. And so it's really exciting to be able to not only support veterans, but women veterans too. Because, you know, once they have that dog and they're out in the public or the community, not only do they represent needs in the service dog industry, they represent veterans. And the fact that, you know, it's okay to have a support system, and that support system might be in the form of a dog that really helps their life. We look at our dogs as engaging the community, getting people as engaged as they can in the community, and not a barrier to the community. You know, so sometimes you'll get a question, oh, you know, will the dog kind of sit in front of me if I'm anxious or kind of, you know, block things for me? Nope. Our dogs are going to sit right beside you. They're going to be your right hand or your left hand. And, but they're going to be a form or an avenue to get you engaged in the community and stay active in the community, which people often come back and tell us, I never knew how withdrawn and pulled back I was because of my hearing, because of my physical disability, because of PTSD, whatever it is, until they got the dog. And then all of a sudden I'm going places that I wouldn't have gone before. You know, just think about the grocery store. I mean, I don't really like going to the grocery store.
Who does?
But when you go there and people are trying to get around you with their cart, or people are impatient, or they're calling you name, if you can't hear your name, you can't hear them calling you, you know, they just think you're ignoring them or you're being rude. You literally cannot hear them because of the background noise or whatever else is going on, the music playing. The dog can alert them to that. So it's pretty freeing, I think, in that regard, to have somebody always with you that can assist you.
Dogs are so soothing. You know, they're great companions. I don't have any, I don't have a hearing issue or anything like that, but, you know, I've always had dogs in my life because they're just great to have around. You know, they're here on this earth to help you and love you, and, you know, and you give them love in return and they're happy. You know,
yeah.
What other being will, you know, you walk out and 5 minutes come back in and they act as if you've been gone for 8 hours, you know, they're happy.
Right.
So I go to take my garbage out. My dog's like, oh my gosh, you're back. How lovely.
Back. Yeah. I know. And it's funny because labs are, I think they take it up a notch. Like labs have that way of looking at you like you are the best thing that ever was. And, you know, our labs that are really, you know, once they get that connection to the person, they're constantly just looking at them like, hey, boss, what's next? What are we doing? Whereas, you know, not all dogs are that attentive, but that's what these dogs are trained to do, just to be there for you. Listen for your next command. What are we doing next? Are we going somewhere? Okay, great. And then at the end of the day, they are just a dog. They want to play. They want to fetch a ball. They'll at least bring it back to you. My dog will fetch the ball all day long. She won't bring it back. And I'm like, okay.
Mine won't either. My dog will say, yeah. He'll go, I'll throw it. He'll go get it. And then he looks at me like, okay, you're supposed to chase me. And I'm like, no, that's not how fetch works.
Yeah. No, I prefer it where they just like put it back in your hand. You just get to keep throwing it. And they'll do that all day long. It's wonderful. But they really are phenomenal dogs. The things they can do are just really unbelievable.
Well, Katie, where can people find you? Where is it best for them to go to the website and check out the website?
Sure. We have a great website. It has some amazing information on it and a great tab for veterans, information for veterans on there. So it's just www.needs.org. We have great videos on there with some of our veteran clients and talking to, you know, giving basically a testimony of how this dog has impacted their life and also demonstrating some of the skill that they can do. These needs dogs, they learn like 50 to 60 skills or tasks. And so it's pretty incredible. As far as, you know, email goes, email is always great. And on the website, you know, they can get more information on there. All of our emails are pretty simple. It's just our first letter of our name. So mine's khanna@needs.org. Pretty simple, but
super simple.
We'd love
super
to hear simple. People, hear from people, talk to them, see what they think their needs are. Or sometimes it's just educating them. Sometimes someone suggested a dog to a person, I think you'd benefit, but they don't necessarily feel like their situation is bad enough or requires a dog. But when you start talking about it, they say, oh, you know what? Yeah. You know, like oftentimes a hearing client might say, well, I thought I would have to have like total hearing loss. Nope. You know, you can still hear, you can hear with hearing aids, but when you take them out, you have some sort of, you know, a loss of hearing. So we'd love to talk to people and just tell them what the possible benefits of a service dog could be for them.
Katie, thank you so much for being on Sisters in Service. It's always wonderful to talk to people and organizations that are so pro-veteran. And my offer still stands that if you have a job where I can just play with the puppies, I'm email me. I'll be there. I swear. My husband's from Massachusetts, so he wouldn't mind going back.
Okay. When you come back here to visit, just look us up because we'll just have those cute little puppies run out in the yard. And,
oh, my God. I'll be in love. I fall in love every time I see a puppy. So, Sisters in Service, I hope that you got to learn a little bit more about Katie Hanna and the needs organization and how they can help veterans. If you're not sure whether or not you need a service dog, just call them and talk to Katie and find out because you just never know. But as always, thank you so much for listening and please stay safe, take care of each other, and until next time.